So if you've become familiar with my voice the last few months, you now recognize that I'm not sounding exactly like myself. I was sick a couple weeks ago. I got back on the wagon, but it's just a little bit of scratchiness still there. It's one of the reasons I really try to take advantage of life, is that I really get struck down when I'm sick. I don't stay sick that long, but then the after effects are weeks in the making. So, sorry about the weird voice. Let's get to it. This is Jason Scott. You're listening to the Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It podcast, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Brenda Romero, Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other people who help make this podcast possible at podcast.textfiles.com. This week was all about handhelds. Handhelds like electronic handhelds, toys, things you would find in booths and toy stores all through the 1970s, 1980s, and 1990s. These little plastic pieces of heaven that you could get at a Radio Shack or a Sears or a Target or any of a number of stores, and which cost a handful of dollars compared to what computers and console games would cost. The downside, of course, being that these were extremely low-quality experiences. We're talking LCD screens, blinking LED lights representing characters, and on the whole, if you had a choice between getting a home console system and getting one of these, you would crack this in half to get your hands on something real, like an Atari 2600 or Intellivision or Nintendo and so on. So the main developers over the years had a number of debates as to what exactly represented items they should be emulating. And initially there was a real strengthening of the screen being the most important thing. That is, if you could emulate the screen, you could emulate everything beneath that screen, and then you would officially have that program captured. And that works well for things like Pac-Man, Galaxian, Asteroids, where you have the game and everyone recognizes it and you see the logic happening and you see the graphics and you think, it's here, it's back, it's functioning. But what do you do if there's a physical component that is vital to that arcade machine? So the example I've given before is the Qbert kick sound, which was done using a pinball kicker that was actually inside of the video game cabinet because Gottlieb was a pinball company and this was one of their rare video games. So Qbert would have this pinball kicker that would actually hit the side of the cabinet. And so you had a physical experience, but how would you portray that with the emulator? Well, the way that was ultimately chosen was an extensible signal that could be read via USB or some other method, or even just portrayed on the screen to show that there was a pinball kicker being activated. In many cases, they just have a sample of a kicker, which is frankly not very convincing right now, but it would play whenever the snake hit the bottom of the box. And now take that debate right there as to how do you portray a physical experience like the kicker. Now expand it out to the point of what happens when all of the physical experience of the arcade, later console machine, later handheld machine has to be brought on the screen. And as a result, there was always these very vigorous debates within MAME developers as to how much they were going to put in, how much they were going to leave out, and whether or not solid state would be something that they wanted to portray. In some ways, it's a very silly debate, but in other ways, it's an understandable situation. A lot of what the emulator authors are dealing with are on the forefront of what's going to be the big concerns going forward. There is a growing wave of software preservationism, and it is coming from academic quarters. It's always existed in some way in military quarters and government quarters, and it comes down to how do you make software do what it used to do, or at least inform us what it used to do, in the contemporary space? And how do you do it in a way that can be repeated for years or decades to come? Now, work had been done on handheld machines for years in MAME, but it was kind of nascent, and it was something that I thought was going along well, but had a little way to go. And one of the developers of MAME, Ryan Holtz, kicked into high gear this year about handheld electronics really coming into their own. He was interested in bidding on an auction of handheld games with the idea of turning them into MAME emulated pieces. And to do this, he brought all sorts of attention and light to the work being done to recreate these games. And what became obvious was that it was really mature. It had gotten to the point that they could get their hands on certain kinds of handheld games and rip them apart and have them in some electronic form in less than a day. And since there are dozens, possibly hundreds of these kinds of games, that's a really good turnaround. So I took a look at it, and we had done some compilation before. Dopefish on my volunteer group decided to do this last year. I took a look again. It was in really good shape. You could play these games on the Internet Archive, and it would feel pretty good. It was responsive, it wasn't clicky, and so I wrote a script and just started putting them together. We ended up having something on the order of 40 or 50 of these games working, and I thought, this is the time to announce it. So, if you've missed the news, the Internet Archive now officially has a handheld history collection. That's one word, handheld history. And we have dozens of electronic games up from Tiger Electronics, Bandai, Mattel, Konami. And these date everywhere from the 1970s up through to the 1990s. A little bit about promotion. So I get a little bit of knocking from people regarding the fact that I really like to do these grandstanding, attention-getting campaigns. And the reason I do that is because I believe strongly that an informed populace, when they are given the source material or they're given access to older materials, will be your greatest advocate going forward. If a small number of people know about something and they can get access to it if they use the secret club password or they're with the right faculty or they happen to be on site, you're just not going to have support when issues come down regarding funding or resources or encouragement to do more work. So I think that if I tell people about some big new thing, even if it's been around for a little while, they'll be there for us when we need them. This is a very strong belief of mine. It's been borne out again and again. And it came out when we announced that the Handheld History Collection was up on the archive. I watched the news articles come out one after another. Now, when I do an announcement like Handheld History, I usually get an interesting smattering of response when it comes to journalists and press writers. In this particular case, I tried to write an extremely long and detailed blog entry on the Internet Archive to walk through everything about the handheld history. And in the modern era, that will speed things up because a reporter will just get all of the answers from the blog entry and then just regurgitate it to people. This is what happened with Mashable and The Verge and Motherboard and all these other locations. Nobody contacted me. Nobody wrote me a letter. Nobody tried to get secondary information, which is either a sad commentary on journalism or an indication that the blog entry slash press release was sufficient to get the news out. Now, some of them reported a couple details wrong here or there, but most importantly, they got the URLs right and they sent a lot of people to the archive. Tens of thousands of people came visiting. And within a couple days later, then you start to see the slower, more methodical press. A podcast is going to happen on Monday. There's going to be a couple interviews that happen. A few people asked me for clarification about some subject or another. You know, it just worked out over time that more and more people become aware that this thing exists. It's been a week now, and people are still coming to the Internet Archive in droves. I think it's something like once every 10 seconds, there's another hit to the collection and somebody boots up a handheld game. Hooray! Winning success. Now, handhelds, for me, have a history going back to my single digits. My father got me a Mattel Electronics football game, and people either know exactly what I'm talking about or they've never touched one. And it was a small white handheld plastic that had a rounded, oblong, almost football stadium shape for the screen. The actual screen was a series of dashes and small LEDs. I can't stress this enough. They were just little glowing dashes, and those represented players, and they had dim dashes or they could be bright dashes, and that meant something. And you'd play a game that was sort of like football, but frankly wasn't football at all. It was more like a game of dashing along with a weird down system. And my father and I would play this, and I must be, I want to say 8 or 9 at this time. We're playing this game, and I am good at it. I'm not great at it, but I'm good at it. And my father thinks this game is pretty fun too. And I have a very strong memory visiting him when divorce visitation was happening and just, you know, lying back on the bed next to him while we're both playing this game. You know, I think it was summer and we're just passing this little plastic game between each other to play the game. And my father is trying to explain how downs work in football. This is American football, where if you get to a certain number of yards, you can start over again and you can get up to 4 downs. And you know, all of this stuff of this game, I just don't understand. And I was able to play it by feel. I would, you know, move my little dash avatar around other little dash enemies, and I would then do a punt, and sometimes I would get the score and other times I wouldn't. And the weird scoring system, I mean, I just have this swirling memory of time with my dad and weird math and this little beeping piece of equipment. And it helped a lot when my father took me to a football game sometime later, and I was able to actually correlate what I had seen on the little piece of plastic along with what was happening down on the field. Everybody who interacted with these electronics that were portable and simple and just did the job they were supposed to do, everybody, it seems, has these kind of strong memories. Being in the back of a car and being driven around at some event, being at a party and staying off in a corner, spending time in the living room or out by the pool or walking down the street. You'd have this little tiny piece of the world. Now it's very simple to bring up everything on your phone. And people have just kind of internalize that world where you're able to make these machines a living part of your daily breathing life. But for some people, this is the beginning of that. These tiny games, these simple sounds, and playing them way past their bedtime, way longer than they should, and wishing with all of their heart that they could get another one soon. What's fascinated me has been the reaction of people to playing these emulated versions of these old games. You would be surprised, or maybe not at all, how many people just feel like they've met an old friend, a Merlin, a Simon, a Tamagotchi, these pieces of their own life that they had forgotten about, and watching some version of it popping up in the browser window, and they're suddenly dancing once again with their old companions. I mean, the feeling must be palpable. Like I said, the MAME team went into this big, and it's two team members, Sean Riddle and Hap, who seem to be doing the lion's share of basically digitizing these old machines. They have to rip them apart in many cases, to get at the circuit board, to scan the screens and the backgrounds, and then put in all of the logic and verify it's done what it's supposed to do. They are doing this tirelessly on their own, and then another batch of their work shows up with each new monthly version of MAME. After that, it'll be trivial to add it to the Internet Archive. I've got a script that does it pretty quickly, so it looks like there's just gonna be handhelds for days going forward. I have something like 200 that they've emulated to various degrees. We've put up something like 75 at this point. It's going to be an exciting adventure. I am kind of excited to see what comes down the line from this. Already people are contacting me saying, I have these old games. I'm willing to sacrifice them. There's an interesting emotional trade-off going on here that interests me as well. People are very clear on the fact that if you take this electronic game and you put it through this process, the game has to be destroyed. It has to be pulled apart, it has to be deeply scanned, and then it is turned into an emulated version of whatever that item is. And so there is going to be a sacrifice in the name of the future. And I'm happy about the number of people who have said that they think that sacrifice is worth it, that they had a game that was emotionally important to them, that they've kept around all of these years, and that they're willing to mail to me to forward to this team, knowing that it will never return, and that at some point in the next version of MAME, they'll suddenly see their old companion, this piece of plastic that was a part of their lives, living forever all throughout the world. And when people by the hundreds or the thousands play this game on MAME, they are playing this person's old friend. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I really love the poetry of that. People should know that when you make people play with technology that is long past its expiration date, you are creating a connection that otherwise would never have been there. I mean, I have played more LCD games from the 1990s, long after I would have owned any of this stuff. And I can tell you that, yeah, they're kind of fun. They're kind of weird. I like the rule sets sometimes. I think the complicated controls of some of them are ridiculous. But there's an artistry in trying to portray a complicated thing in two dimensions. Not just two dimensions of a screen, but literally etching one piece of plastic so that no dot can be used in more than one kind of sprite, and then somehow making a game out of it. It's really kind of breathtaking, the amount of artistry that went into it. And I also hope that this will maybe cause a renaissance in trying to track down some of these folks. As people like Kevin Savitz do work trying to find people related to Atari, and in doing so, he's found hundreds of people related to Atari tangentially who have never been interviewed about what they've done with their lives. Maybe we'll see a little bit more of that involving with these programs. There are museums and collections on the internet around handheld games. The pictures are sometimes fantastic and sometimes could be really improved. I hope that this kind of causes a revolution of people getting their hands on these artifacts and really bringing them up to the highest resolution possible and being able to use them for research going forward. After the initial wave of LCD and LED games, I ended up adding a Texas Instruments Speak and Spell. And like a lot of people, I can have my memory. I remember playing a Speak and Spell over at the Scollins house, the next door neighbors back in my old hometown, and playing with this machine and being completely blown away that it was making the sounds of speech. It was a major refactoring of my relationship to machines when one could, in some way, talk to me, correct me, and teach me. There are people who want to circuit bend. There are people who want to remix. But I find that there are thousands of people who, not unlike a pet, would do anything for 5, 10, 30 more minutes with this part of their childhood. Being able to bring it up in a window, play with it, do things, try old words, play old games, and then put it away until the next time, or have their children experience a little bit of what influenced them when they were children. I have pictures of young kids playing Speak and Spell for the first time on the Internet Archive. I've got photographs of people showing that they have these games somewhere in their house, even now, and how delighted they are to experience them again. So it turns out that handheld is a major part of the electronic human experience. And the incredible work of the MAME team, which includes Hap and Sean Riddle, but also Ryan Holtz and Dopefish helping me get this thing compiled, Dan Brooks working tirelessly to upgrade our system so we can slot in new games almost instantaneously, all these folks are working for a future that I hope we will enjoy for the rest of our lives. May these little plastic beeps and boops live forever. This has been Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. I'm Jason Scott. Thanks to James Bakoyanu, Sam Johnston, and the hundreds of other people who have helped make this podcast possible. The podcast's webpage is podcast.textfiles.com, where you can subscribe to my Patreon, to PayPal, to LibrePay, and a whole bunch of other possibilities. The Internet Archive has been getting hundreds of thousands of hits due to this handheld thing, and the reaction of the staff has been fun. One of the things that people are excited by is the fact that while we're doing handhelds now, the next wave coming up is that the MAME team has been working on musical instruments. That's right, synthesizers in racks and keyboards, making them MIDI connected, the future where you'll be able to hook up a MIDI keyboard to your browser and play stuff on a keyboard that was made in the 1980s, that's coming. It's all very exciting, and to play a small part in bringing these things together and making people happy, can I ask for more? What a fun and fascinating world we live in. Even if I'm a little sick, even if I'm a little under the weather and still recovering, just to talk about all the great things that are happening every single day, that's a joy. Who could ask for more?